The people who want to build a liquefied natural gas LNG export terminal on the Oregon coast and a long pipeline to it are reorganizing their approach in the hope of winning approval from federal regulators. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission denied permits for the Jordan Cove export terminal and Pacific Connector pipeline earlier this month, and within hours of the ruling announcement, terminal and pipeline officials announced their plans to try again. About a week later, they announced an agreement to provide gas to a Japanese utility consortium, proof of demand, it was announced. So let's talk about the ground covered so far and the next steps with two guests. Michael Heinrichs is the Director of Public Affairs for Jordan Cove LNG. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate
And George Angerbauer is back with us again. He's a spokesperson for Williams, Inc., which is the builder of the intended builder of the Pacific Connector gas pipeline. Hi, George.
Good morning, Jeff.
Michael, let's start with you. Just get an idea of the basic reaction. I have to believe this is a bit of a surprise based on some of the earlier regulatory hurdles you'd cleared.
It was. We had already received an Oregon state permit for our clean air permit from Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and we were certainly making headway and still are with many other permits. So this did come as a shock, especially on the heels of us announcing the first customer agreement with Jericho, the world's largest LNG buyer. So it did catch us off guard, and that's why we're going to go back and request a rehearing.
So is it an administrative rehearing, or does it have to be done through courts? What's the pathway from here?
At this point, my understanding is that it's an administrative rehearing, and we need to present additional new information for them to consider, and certainly the JERA announcement would qualify as one piece of that puzzle.
So what is JERA? It sounds like it's a consortium of at least two Japanese utilities.
It is. It's of the Japanese first largest and third largest utilities. So it's a very big deal. This is TEPCO, Tokyo Electric, as well as Chubu. And again, they're just massive utilities that power a very large portion of Japan. And they 100% rely on LNG imports in order to keep the lights on, keep businesses running, keep industry going. And so they are looking for a strong, stable partner who's got a strategic West Coast operation going, and we are their preferred choice.
So is this a memorandum of understanding, a handshake deal, something firm about, you know, you will deliver this by this date, et cetera? I mean, how strong is the agreement?
Sure. So the key term sheet is what was announced as being finalized, and the key term sheet has kind of two elements to it. One is the liquefaction capacity. So they have promised to buy at least 25% of our capacity, and those key terms are binding. The part that's not binding, and that's just because they still need to work through it, is reaching an agreement of then having that gas flow through the Pacific Connector pipeline. So that's ongoing, but we do have the guarantee for the liquefaction capacity.
All right, George, let's turn to you, George Angerbauer from Williams, Inc., because the pipeline was the largest part of the denial, it would appear, that the benefits could not be shown to outweigh the adverse impacts to landowners. So how do you propose to overcome that issue?
Thanks for the question. I would probably recharacterize that the pipeline was actually a first order in the denial rather than the larger portion of it, because if you don't have the pipeline, then you can't build the terminal. You can't get energy to the terminal. And so it's kind of a first and a cart before the horse question. But we were surprised as well. We had a very positive final environmental impact statement. And historically, you know, if you look at the pattern of how FERC tends to operate, if they've got problems with the project, you'll see it. In the environmental impact statement, FERC did rate the pipeline as having a minimal impact on the environment, and any impacts would be addressed through mitigation. We are also providing new information to FERC, providing information that demonstrates that there are significantly more landowners that have been engaged and have signed agreements with us than they had when they came to that decision. They came to that decision with some older information, and we're providing updated information to them.
So, George, when you talk about mitigation, what kinds of things can you offer to make the deal sweeter for landowners financially or environmentally or in any way, really?
Great question. I'll talk about the landowners because that's widely misunderstood. Currently, we have a number of landowners who have agreed with us. We are offering incentives to them, several thousand dollars as a pre-signing bonus because we have been discussing this with them for a number of years. We want to make it worth their while just to sit down and talk with us. And by sitting down and talking with us, they're not committing to anything, but we have options on the table with a great deal of landowners. We're in active discussions with more, and we'll contact all affected landowners through the course of this year.
A number is a fairly vague term. What percentage can you tell us about the amount of land that still you have to get agreements on this pipeline if it goes through?
I'm not exactly sure of the exact number of where we are, Jeff, but it's significantly higher than what FERC assumed and reported. I couldn't give you a number right now. I don't have that off the top of my head.
All right. One of the figures I've seen some people bandy about, and this is often in the comments section of various websites, though, is that 95% of the landowners have not agreed. Is that even close to what your knowledge is?
No. And the reason I don't have that exact figure is because we did start in Coos County in 2015, and we had approximately half of the affected landowners in that county not willing to talk to us or make an agreement initially, and a lot of that reason was because we had not heard back from FERC about the final environmental impact statement and a certificate, and a lot of them were waiting to see what happened before they made their decision. So a figure of 95% is very misleading because we had up to half that were at least willing to talk with us and wait and see.
All right. George Angerbauer represents the Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline Project. Michael Heinrichs is the Director of Public Affairs for the Jordan Cove LNG. Not surprisingly, the phones have already lit up. You can join in, too. 800-838-3760 by email jx@jeffnet.org. We'll start with Greg in Elkton. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Greg, you there? Greg is not there. Let us go to Deb in the Green Springs. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an affected landowner over in Klamath County, and we have been working on this for 10 years, fighting this project. I just want to say that, you know, the FERC had every right, every reason to reject this project. This is now a rejected project, and we resent the fact that this company continues to hassle landowners, and under the guise of a project that's still alive, they are continuing to, after March 11th, to try to negotiate with landowners and get more landowners to sign up. It's going to be the largest polluter in the state of Oregon. It's fraught with many problems. Some feel like it's the poster child for FERC to have denied. They had every right to deny it. If they had paid attention to what the landowners sent in back in December, then nobody would have been surprised that FERC came to this conclusion. Their rules are clear. And I think that this is a last-ditch, desperate attempt by the company to convince FERC that they made the wrong decision, but FERC did not make the wrong decision. And landowners are very unhappy with this. Whatever they're telling you about Coos County, we follow it too. And if there are landowners that have signed up after March 11th, when it was denied, then that is not due diligence on their part. So I'm just set up with the company. I think it's time. FERC has said no. It's time for them to go home.
All right. Thanks for that, Deb. Appreciate that. George, how has work, in fact, continued to obtain permission from landowners along the pipeline route since the denial?
Yeah, we certainly have continued to talk to landowners. Initially, we did pause to see what our options were. FERC did indeed have an option of applying for a rehearing of their decision. That language was right in the order, so there is a process that's legitimate that FERC accepts, and we're following that process. And in the meantime, the project has received a denial order, but that order is conditional upon the appeal that we have. Let me just address as well, a lot of folks And we recognize there is opposition to the pipeline, and a lot of folks don't realize that Williams currently operates a huge amount of pipeline already in the state of Oregon. And the reason that they're not aware of it is because it's out of sight. It operates safely, reliably. It's been doing so for over 50 years, just like this pipeline would when put into operation.
That's the Eugene to Grants Pass pipeline you have now?
Yes, it extends down across the Columbia, past Portland, Salem, down to Grants Pass.
All right. How big is that pipeline?
Just in diameter. It telescopes down. It starts at about 30 inches and telescopes way down, based on the demand that currently exists in the southern part of the state. But as folks who are supportive and as communities who want this project to go forward have been talking with us, we've identified that there is opportunity and there will be a connect between the existing pipeline and the Pacific Connector pipeline that could power and supply energy to over 300,000 residences or equivalent number of businesses or even a large power station.
George Angerbauer is with the Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline Project, spokesperson for the Williams Company. Michael Heinrichs is with the Jordan Cove LNG. We're examining what goes on from here with the Jordan Cove project. Michael, I want to come back to you because a lot of this seems to revolve around FERC saying there was no demonstrated demand for the products of pipeline and terminal. FERC did apparently ask on several occasions for data on potential customers, which you did deliver after the rejection. What was the holdup before that?
It just takes a long time to negotiate these deals, and I can say that FERC's ruling did catch us off guard, and we wish that we would have been able to turn back the clock and give them the heads up that we were about to announce a customer. And to Ms. Evans' point on that, I understand FERC's ruling, that it does have to do with providing market demand and saying that there needs to be customers. And I think that that's a huge part of our rehearing, is bringing about the new information that it's undeniable that there is demand for our project. And it's no longer hypothetical. We have the world's largest LNG buyer now contracted with the project. There will certainly be more high-quality customers who sign on hopefully soon. But, again, those negotiations might take time. These are very large contracts. So if we do prove that there is a market demand and that we have customers, I believe that we would essentially satisfy FERC's requirement, and therefore the requirement that some of the opposition are making, that we don't have customers. Well, now we do. So I think that that's why we are moving forward with this request of rehearing and are confident that it'll be heard.
JERA essentially signed up for about one quarter of the capacity of the terminal?
They have at least. So in this contract, at least is kind of a big term, even though it's just a couple of words. But at least a quarter, yes, and that gets us started.
If nobody else signs up, though, can you make any money at it?
If nobody else?
Yeah.
Well, people will. Like, we are already in negotiation and finalizing other negotiations with customers.
I get your surety, but if you're stuck at a 0.25% capacity, does that make you unwieldy economically?
If we were stuck there, we could not get off of that, I would leave that to our commercial team to answer. But in my opinion, that would be an issue. But that is not what we're operating off of.
Okay, we have other questions here. Let's see. Stacy in Myrtle Creek says she's a property owner who'll be affected by the Pacific Connector gas pipeline. She's got a couple of questions. She wants to know, George, what action will Williams take if private landowners refuse to enter into easement agreements for the pipeline?
That's a great question. We do have a lot of landowners who have been unwilling to talk to us. As I said, a lot of them have been waiting for a decision from FERC, and with this rehearing request out there, the process for FERC to respond to that's going to take probably another couple of months at least. And we'll continue to ask for opportunities to talk with landowners. They certainly have the right to refuse to talk with us. If it plays out that throughout the year they continue to refuse, and let's just assume for the sake of argument that FERC did grant a certificate, at that point, we do expect that a lot of those who are refusing now would talk with us. That's been our experience in the past. We've done this all over the country, and you know that's why you know we have energy flowing across the country as it does. But if in the case that they did continue to refuse to talk to us, we would mail them an offer without their input, which we would like to include. But we would mail them a baseline offer for to purchase an easement on their property, not purchase land, but to purchase an easement. And we would try our best to negotiate with them. A certificate would grant us a right to eminent domain, and in rare cases, we have used that in the past. Typically, it's about 1.5% of the total affected landowners that that end up in that situation.
All right. Adam and Eugene writes that this project was initially sold as being for import, and it was, in fact, put in for permits that way and was switched to export. How can the public's trust be regained, he asks, especially with all the breaches of trust in the petroleum industry lately? Michael, can you take that one?
Well, there's just a new glut of natural gas in the United States that certainly wasn't present in the early 2000s, and that's responsible for the change from import to export. All studies show, if you look at private industry studies as well as governmental studies, there's more than enough natural gas in the United States to export and keep that going for decades. Some people say more than 100 years. So we don't see it shifting back. If it did, and we decided to that the nation needed to import again, we would go back through the process. Rearrange our infrastructure and apply for import, which is similar to how Gulf Coast projects had import projects and then are going through the FERC process right now to get permits for export.
And what do we know about the timeline on rehearing and when things might be happening?
We understand that we need to file by April 11th, and then it'll be up to FERC on when they want to make a determination.
All right. Well, we have not heard the last of this by a long shot, I'm confident. Michael Heinrichs is the Director of Public Affairs for Jordan Cove LNG. George Angerbauer is a spokesperson for Williams, Inc., which is the Pacific Connector Pipelines creation company. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, thank you very much.